Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here he is, the 1st of August.
Woo, I like it. Starting to get hot down here, like raining every day.
Well, doesn't it do that most of the time? It cleans the streets.
Yeah, well, we could use that. But, I mean, I got to tell you, it's been exceptionally rainy lately and muggy. I mean, which I guess every summer is like this. But I'm getting the boat painted, and the guy can't paint the boat.
Of course not.
Yeah. I said to him, you got a big tent there. Why don't you put the boat in the tent? We got another boat there and this and that.
The humidity's still too high. Yeah. It's no good.
Exactly. So let's kind of go through some of the things that are going on. Of course, we do know that the markets continue to chug along with new highs on the Dow Jones Industrial Average pretty much daily.
You know, I was thinking it was going to bust the 22,000 mark today.
Tomorrow. It'll do tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe. It's hard to say because the Trump's cave is, or there was a press conference, and then I noticed it went down 10 points after that. And I don't know. Maybe tomorrow.
Well, one of the reasons why tomorrow we have a good head start. So where do we close? We closed at, let's see here, Dow Jones, about 47 points away from 22,000. And going into tomorrow, we had a big report, which we'll get to all the details of this in a minute, from Apple, which blew it out. It was up about 7.5%. And if you calculate already the uptick on the futures, now anything can happen, but the uptick on the futures are about 40 points already. Just on Apple alone.
Mm.
So actually, it's interesting because if you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which we know is a price-weighted index, and you look at the companies that make it up and what has gone on this year already, I looked today and I did some calculations. Apple, Visa, and Boeing, just in 2017... have contributed 1,000 points to the rise in the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Oh, that's an interesting calculation.
That's about 40% of the total.
Yeah.
And most of that being Boeing.
Oh.
I think Boeing was 600 points.
Hmm.
So the Dow Jones Industrial Average now is beating the S&P 500 index year to date about 11% versus 11.2% versus about 10.6% for the S&P 500, while the NASDAQ 100 is up a whopping 18%. Pretty impressive.
Well, yeah, everything is very impressive, and it could go higher.
Yep. Jeremy Siegel says, I'm not sure when it's going to go to 30,000, but it's going to go to 30,000 one of these days.
Well, yes, one of these days.
Eventually, it will get there.
You could rejigger the whole thing tomorrow and it'd be at 30,000 if you wanted to.
Yep. And talking about like what's going on and why, a lot of people want to know the reasons why. Basically, from what I can see at this point, we're in a Goldilocks or a Goldilocks. We're in a kind of a not too hot, not too cold. That was Goldilocks, right?
The three bears. Yeah.
Yeah. We have the GDP, which did print at 2.6% annualized, which everybody was kind of happy about. However, you got to look at it where it was from and all that. Last quarter was revised lower. This was about 0.2 lower than expectations, and a little bit less than anticipated. Markets were not very happy about that a couple of days ago. Nothing terrible, down a little bit for a couple of days and then pop right back up. I have a chart here. You can find all these on dhunplugged.com. In the show notes, there's a GDP chart, and it will show you a little bit about what things are looking like. And you can see, if you take a look at that chart, there's two different time frames. One's a quarter over quarter, and one's a year over year. And you can see that a little bit of
I'm looking at it.
Nothing exciting there, but I don't know. We'll finish the year clearly under 3%.
I would think.
Yeah. Now, was a couple of things... I think also what's possibly, obviously there's a lot of news about politics and things, to say the least.
You think?
So markets, they don't seem to care about the chaos in the White House, which looks chaotic to me at least, what's going on there. This whole Scaramucci thing?
I love the Scaramucci thing.
Yeah, he's been a guest on my podcast in the past, by the way. And we actually used, you know, his SkyBridge hedge fund of funds. We use that for some clients. It actually has a good overall return for what it does. What was really interesting is, you know, we were part of a variety of different conference calls because he was selling this to a Chinese consortium.
Just fund of funds?
Yeah. He was out because he had to basically get rid of all of his assets if he was going into a governmental position.
Right.
So I think his piece is $140 million that he was selling it for or something like that. Now, what was interesting with this is that a couple of different things. First of all.
Well, did it give him the opportunity to get out?
Yeah, it did, but it didn't. We don't know if this deal is going to close.
Oh, so he's out. Nothing happened.
Possibly. The second thing is that we've gone through a couple of different conference calls about how, well, Anthony was there, but he wasn't involved in the day-to-day operations. So when this transition happens, it's not really going to be a problem. All the things are set up. You know, they give you the whole feel-good thing that while you may have come in because of Scaramucci's, his pitch on this whole thing, the reality is he really wasn't running anything. So him being out is not a problem. Of course, you know, nothing bad to say about him, but, you know, okay. Then all of a sudden we get an email, I guess, early last week, and talked pretty much about how really trying to separate themselves from Scaramucci even further, which I thought was really interesting. It was kind of between the lines you had to read, but it was clearly them distancing themselves from Scaramucci. I thought that was interesting. Huh. So here's a couple of thoughts on this whole Scaramucci thing. Was this the greatest tax scam ever? Sell a company, get a government appointment, pay no tax on the sale, and then you're out.
Well, give me a little background on how this tax thing works.
Well, when you sell, like for example, when Tillerson or anybody sells their position, let's say in a company or whatever it is, gets rid of their assets, in order to get an appointed position in government, that transaction is a tax-free transaction.
What?
Yeah, it's always been the case.
I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The government says, you know, you have to do this. They're forcing you to do it. So, you know, they're not going to require you to pay taxes on this deal because you're forced out. Right?
Yeah, it sounds like a very interesting idea for just scamming the tax man.
Yeah, so maybe Scaramucci said, listen, I really supported you during this whole election and just give me a position somewhere. And he did get one. He was with the Import-Export Bank, and I guess that did help him avoid the taxation on this. But that's one of the things, all these billionaires that were appointed, right? Gary Cohn, where's the benefit there? Wilbur Ross, you know, where's his benefit instead of staying in the private side? Well, because they got to basically one of the reasons aside
to get the bailout tax free.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
That is great. But again, wow.
Yep.
I never considered this.
Yeah. And then this is a secondary thing. So was it a great tax scam? It was that whole play here. Or I was thinking about this whole 10-day thing and what happened here. Was this really just a game that was played brilliantly by President Trump to totally humiliate Mooch after what he did to Trump back in 2015? When he basically...
Well, maybe, you know, just that's a possibility.
Yeah. Just, you know, give him all the ammunition he needs to hang himself here. Give him all the, you know, swell his head in this position. And we know he always wants to be involved. And he, you know, steps on Air Force One. He gets all this power. And then, you know, he just blew up.
Hmm. Well, it's somewhat mysterious.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of it. I mean, the whole thing could be a grand scheme. Nobody knows.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the transportation average. I thought this was kind of interesting considering we just talked about Boeing and what's going on with, you know, e-commerce and commerce and FedEx and all that. I did a quick down and dirty chart from the beginning of this year of the IYT, which is the transportation average, the iShares transportation average, and the S&P 500 index.
Okay.
And I looked at, you know, what was the performance. Now, what's really interesting here is if you look at this chart here, the S&P or the SPY is up about 9.8%. This is without dividends. But look at the transportation average rolling over recently, down about 6.5-7% from the high, 6% from the highs.
Yeah, they seem to be tracking, although there's a discrepancies in terms of the ratio from one to the other, but they seem to be tracking pretty much the same until looks like mid-July. And then one goes falls like a rock.
Yeah. I'm not sure what this is about. It's about FedEx, UPS, a few others, but we're still seeing Boeing was doing very well. So there's obviously something going on here, because there is a theory, the Dow Jones. There's a couple of different theories out there, but you want to see confirmation of a rise of the transportation index along with the Dow Jones. And there's some kind of divergence. Now, I didn't show the Dow Jones here. I showed the S&P 500, but there's still something going on here that's, I think, quite interesting. This isn't just a little blip differential.
No, this is horrible.
Yeah. So
I mean, the differential before was just a kind of the ratio, but now it caught up to the S&P, and then it just dropped like a rock.
I don't know if this is a precursor to anything. You know,
we
are seeing that housing starts are still good. Generally,
it doesn't
speaking.
Look good.
Yeah, employment's good. GDP is okay. We saw the manufacturing numbers today from the U.S. this week. We saw it, and it was pretty good. So I'm not sure what this means here. I don't know, but
people should definitely look at this chart.
Yep, dhmplug.com. The other thing is about what's going on with the market. Again, we have this chaos, which I think a lot of markets, you know, markets like when there's nothing done, because there's nothing to be worried about. It's when they start getting involved with things in the government that things get a little bit, you know, people get a little freaked out.
Right.
But it seems like there's high expectations still for a fiscal policy or tax relief. Earnings continue to outpace expectations. About 75% of companies are beating estimates. We talked about this last week, and revenues are good. The Fed maintains a dovish stance in the face of rising rates. You know, they talk about on one hand, oh, we're going to raise rates. On the other hand, well, we're going to do it very slowly over the next decade. And healthcare repeal was blocked again and again and again and again. I don't know. They seem to want to continue voting on something. I saw an interview today that it was a Republican senator came out and said, we haven't even come out with our best ideas yet. I'm thinking, what are you talking about?
They had 7 years.
In other words, we're about to propose another idea, which is one of our best ideas that we haven't.
Oh.
I'm like, what are you waiting for?
I think we're all waiting with bated breath.
Yeah, something about giving back the whole plan to the states and funding the states with this whole thing. And I'm wondering, what is going on? He says, we didn't even know what was in the skinny bill or the other bills. We had no idea really what was going on. We just
voted on nobody it. Knew at the original bill either.
they just vote on it. Who's writing these things that nobody knows about it?
Teams of people that can put together extremely large pieces of legislation.
But
the joke is that this never used to be the case years ago. The legislation never used to be this fat. What they do is they write these huge bills. They're massive. They're sometimes thousands of pages. And they're so complicated that the only people who can actually understand them are the people who wrote them. And a lot of people write these bills, and then they go into the private sector to consult on how to obey the bill.
Very
common.
But
I don't know how to deal with these new laws. Well, we have to hire this consulting firm. And in fact, the consulting firm has the two people who wrote the bill.
But who's giving the responsibility to these other people to write it? Is it under any particular government officials?
Well, it's usually under a senator or a couple of people. A good little group of guys get together, you know, sometimes both parties, sometimes just one party, and they write up some of these massive bills. Everyone gives them the nod to do it. And they do it, and they're huge.
And what do the senators just sit back and smoke cigars?
Yeah, they just sit
and
back
sip
and wait.
Whiskey?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, what else are they going to do? I mean, then it goes to committee. They're supposed to understand it a little bit at that point, but very few of them bother. They have their staff. They have a big, giant bill. They may have five people look at different sections of it and then report back. It's a mess. The whole thing's a scam.
This is why we don't want career politicians. This is the whole point of term limits, I think, supposedly.
Well, it's a element.
Yeah, an A element. But now they're talking about doing this nuclear option.
Well, this is kind of surprising me because the bills that they tried to pass, these health care repeals, they whether with there was if or with or with or without a nuclear option, it didn't pass anyway.
Yeah, right.
So what's the point of even discussing that?
I have no idea. And the thing that they tried to pass, that was the interesting thing, was so slimmed down. So they called it a skinny bill. I'm trying to, I guess, get off the skinny
bundle.
Nobody
knows what that was in there either.
Yeah, and it was hardly a few things. I have a solution that can pass. Change the name only. and vote that in, and then they'll have a victory.
Yeah, change that. That's probably as good a concept as anything.
Yeah. Last week we talked about the VIX. Remember, it was nearing the $8 or eight handle.
Yeah,
it's back.
I think it's at 11 right now.
It's 10:09.
Oh, I thought it was 11. It
came up to 11 yesterday and the day before, and it slid back a little bit. But still a pretty significant move. Remember, I talked about one of the better ways to invest in this was a VIX option. And I picked up the $12 call due in September.
Turn it around?
It's right now.
Are you still holding it?
I'm still holding it. It's about even. It's a little bit higher than where I bought it. But it was probably about 15%. Now it's about 5% where I bought it. Still a long term to play this. Even though markets have been very resilient in the face of everything. I mean, missiles, White House chaos, no bill, yes bill. And the list goes on. You know, the fact is that it doesn't have to be a gigantic correction, but we're due at least for a little bit of a blip somewhere here, particularly after the earnings season.
Yes.
That's what I would think.
It doesn't help that Apple's coming in. I didn't get the guidance for Apple. What did they come in with that?
All right, so we can skip down to Apple here. Let's think. Okay, Apple sees quarter four revenues of 49 to 52 billion versus 49 and a quarter. You see the gross margins between about 37.5% and 38%, which is right about in line. They came in at $1.67 versus estimates of about $1.57. Revenues beat slightly, $45.4 billion versus $44.9 billion. And gross margins, again, right in there. Now, what was interesting, by the way, so they're coming out with a little bit higher. Now, one of the things that people are talking about here is that there was a big concern that the next upgrade of the iPhone could be delayed.
Yes, that's all the gossip is about that.
But they're coming in with estimates that they looks like that it may not be delayed. The estimates look like that they're thinking that they're not going to be delayed at all, and that's why they're calling for estimates very close to, or their guidance close to the estimates that are currently out there. So that would infer that there is no delay in this. I need to go to an Apple iPhone factory one day just to see the enormity of it.
Oh, it's got to be unbelievable.
It's got to be crazy what's going on there. I mean, just rows and rows of people and machines and the amount of iPhones. Listen, they put out in the last quarter, they sold 41 million iPhones. Now, that was compared to 47.5 million last year. And supposedly they actually took some down from inventory. So it was approximately really about a 44 million iPhones. That's a lot of iPhones.
I'd say.
That's a lot of sales for any company out there's lifetime. Much less just a quarter.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right? Now, here's the interesting number.
I would say they're on a roll.
Oh, yeah. I think there's an opportunity in this company. Actually, we added Apple today to one of our portfolios. Even though we knew earnings were coming out, they finally came back into our screen, which we rotate every 3 months with the TDI Managed Growth Portfolio. And they came back in, and we actually put them in this morning. So that worked out pretty well so far. Here's the number that I thought was really interesting. Their iPads. You know, iPad sales have been definitely slowing down.
Yeah, once you buy one, what do you need another one for?
Well, here's what's interesting. A year ago, they did 10.9 million. Estimates were for only 9 million in sales this quarter. They did 11.4.
Yeah, I don't know. Was it because of a cheaper one they made, or
they got that?
What was the reason for that?
I don't know. They got. And they have a much more expensive.
Did they say? Did you listen in?
I did not listen in. I'll probably find out more tomorrow when I get all the different analysis that I'll read on it. But I thought that was pretty interesting that that's actually up significantly. It could be simply that, you know, people haven't changed in a long time. And I don't know about you, but these things become bricks after a while.
Well, maybe there's an upgrade cycle.
I mean, I know that the one I have right now, it's pretty much dedicated to over my right now. I don't use it for anything other than the chat room. My iPhone is big enough that I could read everything and do everything on it. I have the big one, the large one.
Yeah.
Mac sales also were better than estimates, a little bit less than last year, 4.3 million versus 4 million estimates. And last year was 4.4 million. So Apple definitely is doing pretty well. All these tech companies are doing pretty well. Now they're coming out with the next design. There's some discussion about their push into virtual reality, the whole VR thing. They're gonna augmented reality, I guess would be better said. Where I guess the phones is gonna be much more of your touchscreen, your phone, your iPad. It's going to have a lot more of the augmented reality, which I guess, you know, right now is limited to looking down a street and identifying things or like the great, I guess this is a augmented reality. So when I was traveling to Greece and Italy and all that, I had my Google Translate app. Have you seen this app?
I have seen the app. Yeah.
It's awesome because you just pointed at something that is in a different language and you say what language it is and it just right on your screen, it changes all the words right in front of you.
Yeah. You don't even have to tell it the language if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. If it's smart enough to pick it up, it will do that. But sometimes it has a little bit of a problem with that. But if you put it, for example, I'm in a restaurant looking at a menu that's in a different language, you just hold it up and you just read your iPhone. It gives you the whole menu, you know, it just gives you the exact same look just in English.
Yes, that's a very good use of the phone.
Right. Or when I'm talking to somebody, you know, you talk to a taxi driver or something, you just talk to it and it translates it for you in that language.
Yeah, I have not seen that in action.
Oh, that's cool. I use that a lot. I use that for like the people at work at my house and stuff like that. I type stuff out and then it just spits out their language.
Oh, I thought you talked into it.
That you could do also. We'll translate from that. Now, we know that the technology companies have been doing well. We know that Apple now is doing well. We saw that Netflix and Google and all these companies. Now, what was interesting, though, is a little chart that I picked up here that outflows from the PowerShares QQQ, which is the number one traded NASDAQ 100 ETF. Okay. Outflows are enormous. As a matter of fact, the five sessions ending July 28th saw the most outflows since early November 2007. Now, once you see 2007, 2008 in any paragraph, it sends like a shiver up your spine.
Yeah.
You know, anytime.
The pattern's very similar to 2007.
Yeah, anytime they reference those dates, I start getting like, you know, buggy.
Yeah, I bet.
You know? So the question is there any concern that the U.S. weakness is overdone, maybe, you know, or something, or the U.S., you know, the weakness in maybe the dollar, for example, or maybe some of the outflows? We did see one of the big things here is that these companies are global, they're international, right? And the dollar is a major tailwind for these companies, major tailwind. The dollar is down 10% year to date. So I wonder if there's a concern that maybe this is oversold to a point and it would turn around. And if so, that would really hurt many of these companies and their outlook for the rest of the year or whenever this starts moving. Now, there is no particular level that I can see here that says, oh, the dollar is going to bounce from here. The more crap that goes on in our country in terms of the government, indecision, inability, chaos in the White House is hurting the dollar. There's no question about that. So this chart, though, shows, if you see this, it's a big chart. from Bloomberg. If you can see that outflows there, that line in that's highlighted in red, and you go back to 2007 or 2003, I mean, that's some significant outflows.
It looks worse than 2007 if you look at the cumulative.
Yeah, I would agree. The most recent from end of 2016, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but something is amiss. You know, you combine that with the dollar issue, and you combine that with the transports, you just have to wonder.
Well, the transport thing is really spooky.
Yeah.
I never knew that was going on.
Mm. Have you heard there's some nefarious activity going on at Wells Fargo?
I've heard some things about Wells Fargo.
These guys are really a piece of work. This is supposed to be this was once the darling. This was the company that was like, "Oh, Wells Fargo. This is a Buffett company. You know, this is a bank that just is, you know, you think of a lot of companies and the crap that they pulled over the years and you're like, "Ah, well, you know, Wells Fargo is still a really clean consumer-based company that just does the right job for people, right?" And then all of a sudden, your head is snapped back, and you find out all these things that go on with the fake accounts and all that. And then they had other things. Well, here's a new one. It seems that Wells Fargo has an issue with about 800,000 people who took out car loans from the company and were charged for auto insurance they didn't need, and some of them are still paying for it.
Yeah, now, this is a good one.
The expense for the unneeded insurance, which covered collision damage, pushed roughly 274,000 Wells Fargo's customers into delinquencies and resulted in almost 25,000 wrongful vehicle repossessions. And a lot of the people were also military service members on active duty.
Yeah, no, this is a scandal. Yet another scandal.
I mean, this is like the car rental agencies, right? They're like, "We're going to add the insurance for you." And, you know, that whole, that debilitating decision when you rent a car of whether or not you're going to fill up or.
Oh, yeah, that should be that should have been a lawsuit waiting to happen, seems to me.
I freeze. I can't.
No, I always decide to fill the car up. If you make it a habit. When you're leaving the airport, you spot the last, in other words, the closest to the airport gas station on your way out, and you just remember that it's there, and that's the place you go.
But those always have the highest prices ever.
I disagree with that.
I mean, the one at the Miami airport. So let's say that fuel prices everywhere else is, let's just say $2.50 a gallon. The one at the Miami airport is $3.50.
Well, that's ridiculous. Most of the ones I've never run into that discrepancy. That's outrageous.
I've seen it. And the one at Fort Lauderdale, there's a couple right around the corner from the Fort Lauderdale. I mean, there should be some gouging laws.
No, we used to have laws like that.
Yep. Nobody cares.
They all got taken out. I guess
the choice is you pay $6 a gallon or $8 a gallon when you bring it back and have to fill up versus $3.50. Who cares?
Well, generally speaking, I put some gas in it. Mm. And I top it off too.
But what's going to go on with this Wells Fargo? I mean, this is now become
a joke.
Issue after issue, ripoff after ripoff. I mean, we did see that.
They should indict the CEO and put him in jail.
Well, the old CEO is out. We know that.
Well, he should be indicted anyway.
That's terrible. Just can't trust anybody. It's again, all about the money. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem with the public markets. You know, it's a good thing that it creates the opportunity to get public funding and to be out there and all that. But at the same time, since it's all about the money and that's all that these public companies care about, they just cut corners and do all sorts of things to, you know, really make it difficult on the rest of the world because they have to keep up, you know, the market expectations.
Yeah. Well, they shouldn't have set such high expectations in the first place.
Mm. Let's talk about the hedge fund industry. You know, Paul Tudor Jones, you've ever heard of that name?
No, I have not.
Kind of famous. He sounds like a rock band or some kind of a 70s band, Paul Tudor Jones. He's one of the guys that started the whole, one of the guys that was, I think, credited with beginning the hedge fund industry as we know it, you know, back many years.
Oh, okay. I should know it.
What's interesting is, I mean, he was at a point, he used to charge somewhere like 4% and 27% of profits. Now, okay. what's happened, he had a run back from, I think it was about a 20-year run from the 80s to like 2007 or something like that, at about 26% per year.
I'd take it.
On average, that's pretty good. What's interesting is that now the fund is starting to shrink. The firm saw last quarter people pull out 15% of their assets. And now the company only has about $3.6 billion, which is not, you know, chicken change there. But it $3.6 billion, which is almost about half of what they had a year ago, which is pretty amazing. And this is a trend.
And all the hedge funds, people are bailing out and taking cash. What are they doing with the money?
Yeah, well, if you have the choice of a 2% plus 20%, 2% management fee plus 20% or 25% of the profits for underperformance against a benchmark like the S&P 500, or you could just have a 20 basis point S&P 500 ETF where it doesn't seem like things ever go down. What are you going to choose?
Well, I guess you would choose the ETF.
Right. So that's what's happening. And the more time that goes on, that there are no major dips in the market and people are very accustomed to, well, if it goes down, it just comes right back up. And you know what? Long term, even through the 2007 through 2009 period, well, I would have recouped all my money. Then what? So, well, if it's not going
to be a problem. So what do you think is going to happen here with
these
guys?
Well, we're seeing it. We're seeing that, first of all.
They're just going to fold these funds left and right?
Especially if they underperform, because one of the other parts of their payment scale is that they have this benchmark comparison and they get their profit over a benchmark rate. And if they're under this watermark, they call it the high watermark, they won't get their profit sharing. And if they don't get their profit sharing, what a lot of them do is they close down the funds and open up a new one. It's smelly business. Hmm. And what we have seen is, yes, that the hedge funds that were built to cater to institutional investors, and they were built to weather many different storms. If there's no storms, why do you need an umbrella?
Good point.
Speaking about umbrellas, a little quick segue here. You know, there was did we talk about this, the umbrella sharing in China?
Yeah.
We talked about it?
It was all stolen.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so same thing going on here. They're just stealing their umbrellas. There's no need for this anymore. A lot of players are actually saying, hey, you know what? There is a lack of desire to have this protection and to have the hedging factor, because if there's no risk, what the hell? Now, I'll tell you, once we see this get to a point of being publicly known, that there is such a degree of, global agreement that, what's the story here? You know, why would we even do this? That I think that's when things will turn around. Like you say, everything cycles.
Yes.
But
yeah, I can see this thing's backing way off and then being the only game in town at some point after the market collapses or something along those lines.
Flock back to it. Now, the other thing that's happening here to hedge funds is not only about performance, because when you invest in a hedge fund, it's not just necessarily about performance. It's about diversification. There's a whole host of things why you'd want to do this. But the other thing is there is a major move in the industry to drive fees down on investments. As a matter of fact, just last week, there was a filing by Schwab for zero management fee ETFs, which I don't even understand.
I don't either. How does that even work? Why would they do that? And how would they make money?
I don't know. The answer is I don't know. Now, I could speculate. I assume that they buy stocks inside of there and they may charge a fee for that. You know, they may get a couple bucks on each ticket.
Oh, you think that they're just buying, they're churning so they can make it on the fees.
I suppose that they trade it internally and maybe they get some of the
they get a piece of that.
But maybe. Because that's what's all going. So far, they've already done no fee investment advisory, but if you use their funds. So they're doing it just to bring money in and automating the whole process.
And a lost leader maybe too.
Yeah. I don't know. The whole thing is a bit crazy. Mm. But it's driving. I mean, already we have things that, you know, some ETFs are 0.5, 0.05, not 0.5, 0.05. In other words, five basis points of fees. That's like nothing.
Right.
You know, $5 commissions
compared
on stock
to a
trades.
Mutual fund, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, and they're good for certain reasons. The problem is that they're being advertised as good for all circumstances. And I really think that ETFs for bonds, foreign investments in stocks and a variety of other areas that need an actual manager on there are really bad in the long haul for investors. There's a reason why you would want a manager on a particular style of investing. Now, for things like efficient markets, like the large cap US, even some small caps, large cap developed markets around the world, maybe not. But when you're looking at, for example, high yield bonds, I do not want to have just a high yield bond portfolio that is just being blocked up and not managed. I want to have a manager knowing what's going on and finding out where the best bonds to buy, which ones potentially could default, where the underlying problems is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So
unless you're going to do it yourself,
mm-hmm.
which means it's just a full-time job.
Right. Yep. Mm. All right. Update on the old Codgers portfolio. You're not going to like this. Nope. Not one bit. Since inception, the old Codgers are up 4%. The millennial portfolio is up 21%.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a big move this year. For all of you listening, by the way, you could follow John on Twitter at The Real Dvorak. Myself, Real Andrew Dvorak. Horowitz, yep, at The Real Dvorak. Did I ever ask, are there a lot of imposters out there?
There's a couple.
Yeah. They get their
not as bad. Facebook is worse because I do not have any Facebook presence whatsoever, and I know there's at least two fakes out there.
I know there's an Instagram with Andrew Horowitz, and it's a hot chick that uses that.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know.
That's a plus.
I guess. Okay, let's see what else we got here. What else we got? Donations, of course, we accept. We're not going to go through that today because you could do it if you want, whatever you like. Let's see here. Ah, the Chipotle continues.
Oh, yes, Chipotle.
The closer to the pin is active right now. You can go check that out on DH Unplugged as well. A couple people pretty close. You know, we'll see how this plays out. It's going to end next week. We need something for the following one to. I was thinking about Blue Apron possibly. It's a pretty new stock, but Blue Apron could be interesting.
It's going to be kind of volatile, it seems.
Yeah, it would be. We could do something like Groupon, which is very low.
No, priced. I don't like
Groupon. No, you don't like that
let's
one.
Do something really. Let's do something wild.
Something wilder.
Yeah, something I'm thinking crazy? Of, let me look, I'm going to look at some my list of crazy stuff.
We could do some kind of biotech, maybe.
How about a bank?
A bank. You want to do Wells Fargo? We did Wells Fargo, didn't we do
Wells Fargo? No, screw Wells Fargo.
Yeah, screw that. We don't even give them any kind of advertising.
Here's one that's corkscrewing. It might go up or down,
okay.
Which is a Veritex. That's the Southwest Regional Bank's bunches of them.
It's called Veritex?
VBTX.
That's a bank.
It's more than a bank. I think it's a group of banks.
VBTX. All right, I'll take a look at that. Do you have a second one in case for whatever reason that doesn't work?
It might not work. I will have. I got to change my screen. Hold on. One sec.
The old corkscrew.
Here's one that I was looking at, which is a penny stock kind of. But I noticed that this thing was – I was watching the tape today. And I saw this thing. Scott, this is the one we've talked about, this Dry Ships.
Oh, God.
DRYS.
We should do that. I don't think
we should.
Yeah. It was up 65% today. But
yeah.
It's a $5 million total cap.
It's perfect.
Oh, God. Yeah, Dry Ships, that would be... Oh, you got to take a wide range on that one.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that. Okay, where are we? Oh, I have a great story. We're about to enter. This is where we need... We need Adam's megaphone for this. We're about to enter the screwy part of the show. And then we'll get to our stocks in a minute here. I got a couple of crazy stories here. I guess we'll start with this. When I say brilliance, I'm serious. This is probably, I thought this tickled me, and I thought this was the most brilliant idea ever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw this. It's entitled, How this author made $290,000 selling books. Now, as a person, you know, you have some things out and you write things, and I got a couple of books under my belt and all that, right? And I'm thinking, yes. What is that? $290,000 selling books. What is that about, right? This is so brilliant. Now open this up. There's a link.
The get-rich-quick scheme.
This is
how I made $290,000 selling books paperback 2017.
Yeah.
So the book is about how he made $290,000 selling books.
Right. And what is the price of the book?
$290,000.
How many are...
One new, it says.
There's only one available. $290,000, one available. And the reason why he said he didn't go higher is because you can't go over, I guess, $300,000 unless it's some kind of collector's item.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it has 114 reviews already somehow. I don't understand how.
Yeah, you only one copy. How can you review it?
I guess these are from people that haven't bought yet.
That's very funny.
How great is that?
Well, good luck to him selling that one book.
I made 300.
You know, it reminds me of there's a rule in direct marketing that kind of holds up for a while or within a range. But it's a steadfast rule. So technically speaking, this is not something that couldn't possibly happen. The rule is that no matter what you have for sale, say you're doing newsletters or you're doing catalogs or you're doing direct mail, whatever you have for sale, at whatever price you put it at, the net will always be the same. And you'll find this in a number of direct marketing manuals about this idea. And the direct marketing guys always like to say, and so why wouldn't you put it at the lowest price you can? Because you at the same time, you're going to have the same net sales, but you're going to have a mailing list that's pretty formidable if you sell it cheap. And I've thought about that rule over the years, and I think it's bull crap. I think, yeah, but this is what this guy's doing. He figures he's going to do $290,000 if he sold it at $2 a copy, but he'll just sell one copy at this price. He doesn't care about the mailing list.
Listen, if I can create, I don't know if it says how long this book is, how many pages. Does it say that anything? I don't know. I have to look at that. I see all formats and editions. That's the only one. I don't know. I you got to think this is a total scam, but I don't know how Amazon would have allowed it on their site.
It seems more like an April Fool's joke.
I just love it. I just love it. Well, as we're talking about the screwy things, this is a story that you have to wonder if this is true or not, but 31 eyeballs were found in a man's rectum. Did you see this story?
I kind of saw it. I just thought, I don't know what to make of that story.
Police made a routine traffic stop early Thursday morning last week and got more with it than they bargained for. So it seems that this guy, Roy Tilbot.
Why would they know that eyeballs were in there?
They didn't. So what happened is they made a routine traffic stop. Now, he stepped out of his El Camino for a field sobriety test. I guess he was driving around strangely, which, by the way, if I had 31 eyeballs up my ass also, I'd probably be driving a little strangely, yeah. Right? Okay.
Here's looking at you.
Okay. all of a sudden, several eyeballs slid from his right pants leg onto the road. So he assured the police the eyeballs were not human, but insisted they were cow eyeballs that he pilfered from Johnson Meats, which is a slaughterhouse where he works as a butcher. And he said that I enjoy eating bovine eyeballs, and smuggling out in my colon was the only way I knew how to get them out without potentially getting caught and fired. Not allowed to take stuff out.
Why can't he just ask for them? What are they doing with these eyeballs? They put them in hot dogs? I don't know.
I don't know, but maybe there's some issue about contamination, or there's some issue with, you know, you don't want to take them out and sell them because if they're caught and they're not good, then I don't know if you're allowed to sell. I mean, I don't know. I guess you could sell eyeballs, right? I suppose.
I would think.
I don't know. He said that he estimated he smuggled several thousand eyeballs from the plant over the past month. The other question I have is, you know, if you're going to stick these up your tuchus, okay? Personally, I don't care how much. First of all, I wouldn't eat the eyeballs. But second of all, I would not eat the eyeballs that were up my butt.
Well, maybe you scrubs them.
There's no way to get them clean enough.
Maybe put some in the dishwasher.
Well, he puts them in soup, he said. They're beneficial for erectile dysfunction, which I currently battle. But I also dislike the texture and taste.
Well, there is a Middle Eastern. We don't have this guy's name, do we? Tybalt?
Roy Tilbot.
Yeah, well, there is a Middle Eastern. People always tell me about this, that when you go to a Bedouin dinner or some sort of a thing where they had, you get the guest of honor gets the soup with the two goat eyes in it. Mm. I think this was used in one of the Indiana Jones movies as a point of grossness.
But so the other question I have is, he's working, he's doing his thing, he's cutting up these various cows, he's butchering them up and all that. And then what does he have? Does he have a move? Is it kind of like a move where he just...
How does he get the eyeballs is what you're asking.
I'm not really concerned about how he gets the eyeballs. I could sort of figure that out. I'm asking how he gets them up his tuck.
Oh, maybe he sits down a lot. Maybe there's some trick to it.
There's got to be a trick. I mean, he's good at it, several thousand. So you think he would take the
maybe
fillet.
He's not doing it just because he likes the eating eyeballs. Ah, maybe, you know.
Maybe there's a whole
some
feeling
perversion involved here.
Yeah, there could be. All right, on with some things that are not as disgusting or distasteful. The Slovenian, I was just there. The Slovenian Statistics Office this Monday said that 1.93 million tourists visited the country, which only has about 2 million people to begin with.
Yeah, it's very small.
In the first half of the year, which is a 15% increase from the same period last year. And they're saying this is due to all the First Lady tours, Melania Trump tours.
No, it could be. Well, she's from that part of the world, somewhere. I forgot where.
Slovenia. She's from Slovenia.
Was she Slovenian?
Slovenian, yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And the thing that was interesting... you know, she hasn't been back there since 2002. You would think you go visit.
Well, there's not a lot to do there once you go.
I was there. I had a nice meal, but I don't need to.
Yeah, go. The food is good. They had this thing about pumpkin seed oil.
Yeah. Oh, they do. Had it. It's a green color.
Yeah, it's very tasty too.
Mm-hmm.
The pumpkin seed oil is used in salads, and there's usually used like olive oil almost, and at first flavor. And they have their flea markets and all their Tito stuff. And they have it's a very pleasant place. They got a great little museum in Ljubljana. It's pretty nice. It's small, again. But everything's, I always say, compact. It's a great little place, but I don't see going there much. I mean, you go there and you hang out for a week and you're done.
Yeah, that's enough. I had one day. I was good.
Oh, they have the pastry shops. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I had some.
I asked about this because there's the one pastry shop right in the downtown area that it's very small, but it's a famous one. And I asked about this. I said, these pastries are outrageous. I don't even like pastries. But these were unbelievable. And it's apparently part of the Austria-Hungary Empire from years ago. Slovenia became like this hot spot of making these things, this pastry, because Croatia, they haven't got anything even close.
Yeah, that was the Habsburgs, right?
Habsburg.
Habsburg, yeah. I didn't actually know a lot about them till I was there when I was in Croatia, and I learned about a lot about them. I didn't realize that Marie Antoinette was a Habsburg.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, yeah. They were brilliant what they did. They had all these children. They just sent them out to go marry all the other princes and all the royalty of other countries. And yeah,
but she chose poorly.
Yeah. Very, yeah. That's a good point. North Korea said it conducted another successful test of an ICBM that has the ability to strike America's mainland. Nobody cares. But there you go. And we had, of course, a flyover to show our strength. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration put out this was kind of interesting. This was a pretty good shock to the system. That they're aiming to reduce nicotine levels in cigarettes while exploring measures to move smokers towards e-cigarettes, which was a major shift in what they usually do. And the cigarette stock companies plunged. Yeah, about $60 billion was taken off the market cap of a few companies, both the UK and US based. And this guy, Scott Gottlieb, who's doing all sorts of things for the FDA, pretty, I think he's doing a pretty good job so far. But there's a whole, you know, move for the whole e-cigarette thing. My sister came over with one of those e-cigarette vaporizer heater things.
A vape.
Yeah, but they're not like, it's not small. It's a big old unit.
Yeah, there are some big ones.
Yeah. And I tried it. And
a lot of them are small.
I didn't like it.
Well, why would you like it? It's just a bunch of vapor. It's, I think it's missing. I mean, people that smoke tend to like to smoke because they like the flavor. They like the fooling around with the cigarette, tapping the pack, doing all this stuff. It's a whole rigmarole. These vape things are just like, well, it's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, you don't have that whole, as you would call it, like the water bottle process.
You get your water bottle, you take it, and then you unscrew the cap, and you take a sip, and then you screw the cap back on. You stick it in part of your backpack or wherever it goes, and then you take it out again and unscrew the cap, take a little sip, and then screw the cap back on. It's like a rigmarole again.
Yeah.
Same word.
Closing in a couple other comments before we get to these stocks here. Seems like there's a lot of this going on, which is this whole, I guess, trickery of either phone call or email trickery of some very high-ranking officials. So it seems that U.S. Energy, this, by the way, this particular guy is probably not that hard to spoof. Okay, this is U.S. Energy Secretary Rick Perry.
Yeah, well, so, I think all these guys are easy to spoof.
Yeah, so he was optimistically discussing expanding America's coal exports to the Ukraine and other energy matters during a lengthy phone call this month with a Russian prankster who Perry thought was Ukraine's prime minister. And there was some emails that went back and forth actually with Scaramucci this week. And Scaramucci was tricked into believing that he was talking to Reince Priebus, which, you know what, just for the fact that his name is so difficult, I'm glad he's gone.
Scaramucci?
No, Reince Priebus.
Rance Priebus?
Yeah, Rance Priebus.
Priebus?
Whatever his name is. What kind of a name is that? Rance. Who names their kid Rance?
I don't know. I've always been mystified by that. You know he's going to be kind of a little off if he's named Rance.
Rance. Rance. Finally, before we get to what John is writing for PC Magazine, I just have to mention it because here we are in the midst of the season. I know this is something that you cover a lot, but the Florida Department of Health confirmed its first sexually transmitted Zika case so far in 2017, which brings the report of total Zika cases up to 118 for 2017.
Sounds low.
Zika. It's here.
Zika, Zika, Zika.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that one. Anyway, what are you writing for PC Magazine?
I'm writing about hacking voting machines because that was apparently done at DEF CON or Black Hat in Las Vegas, where they brought all these voting machines in for the hackers to go at, and they hacked every one of them within like an hour.
Don't the hackers need to have something attached to the vote? So what are they? They go into a voting box and they plug something in?
No, they tore them apart. They some of them hacked the hardware. Some of them checked out how the USB port can be talked. You can talk to it through a USB port. There's just a lot of things they did. But the point I was trying to make in this article is that we should get technology out of the voting booth. We shouldn't have these machines in the first place, and we should never go to internet voting. And the only way to go is paper ballots that have got you put an X or a gob of goo on there or whatever, and they save the paper ballots and count them by hand.
Or what?
That's my contribution to the world.
Not
yes?
Chad based.
Chad's out.
Chad's out. Well, we know that from being in Florida, of course, the hanging Chad syndrome.
I forgot to mention in the column because I was trying to remember all the different kinds of voting devices we had here in this Alameda County. And there was once, I remember there was one where you had this black rubber stamp, and you'd stamp what you're voting yes or no. You put a black gob on there. That one I forgot about. Mm.
I'll also mention that we do have now, if you scroll down the page, you'll see we have a new share this on. You could share the DH Unplugged podcast and post and all that on Reddit and Twitter and Facebook and email. So we put these links, just always upgrading the site.
Yes, the site's fantastic.
Yeah, love it. All right, let's take a look at the stocks. Why don't we? Nothing was kicked off this week.
Yeah, I see that.
By the way, this is a game that we play. It's not an offer to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any sort, of any kind, in any manner. Of course, if you decide for whatever reason that you want to buy some of these stocks or think about this or, you know, get involved in this, please seek professional financial advice from a licensed professional in the field. And of course, John C. Dvorak, myself, or Horowitz and Company clients may in fact own any of these. We will duly note that with the disclosure. You can find all this. This is an actual ticking spreadsheet and updating process that happens on DH Unplugged. Just go over and click on the button that says Weekly Stock Picks. And then you can track all of these stocks that are live or those that have come out due to the fact that they were kicked off by some of the rules that we have, which is like a 10% trailing stop automatically.
Yeah. So we're not invested for the long haul at this game, that's for sure.
No, we got some that are long, but no, not really.
Yeah, that's just by accident, I think. So Wells is still up.
Yeah. Yep.
Why?
Can't kick it down.
And I see, I don't have anything for this week, by the way.
Okay.
So you've added Snap.
I've added Snap on the long side. If remember, I was short for a while.
Yeah, I find that to be very peculiar.
Yep, I'll tell you why. Because I've seen this story before. Now, I don't think this is a good company, nor do I. Would I buy this for the long haul. Right. However, one of the things that you have to notice is there's a lot of bad news surrounding Snap, from the fact that they missed their earnings, from the fact that there's a lot of other companies that are encroaching on their territory, the fact that the lockup period has expired and now there's a lot of insider selling, and the latest news that the S&P and other indices are excluding Snap from being in their index due to their dual voting, So this all came out and we knew about this and it's down at about $13.10 or so. And I'm thinking, you know what, once you get sometimes all of this, and plus not to mention it's heavily shorted at this point, once you get all of this out, there is the opportunity for a quick snap, well, no pun intended, snap back the other way or a bounce. Once you see all of this information, it's like kind of like to just pile it on, and then there's nothing else to pile on. Now, they have earnings coming out eventually, of course, but I just think that for a trade here, you know, not the worst idea.
Okay. Looking at this, the overall list, we got lots of green. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the 5 reds, which is not good. And the Resolute Energy is an interesting one, and which is looking better as a buy. It's an oil play. And I'm really kind of surprised that we have Kinder Morgan on here up 10%, because that thing is, every time I've picked it, it craps out.
Yep, this time it's been good, actually, because you got the oil, that moving up, so that helped it out a bit. The one that's interesting here also is CSX.
Yes, I think that chart that you had earlier in the show, yep. I think accounts for this
exactly.
Group.
Exactly. And it coincides to when Buffett got involved in the airlines, and you know, he's been very involved in the train companies. But he recently got back involved in the airlines.
I think Bill Gates is heavily involved in CSX.
He may be.
And Buffett is Burlington Northern, SF, BNSF.
By the way, speaking of the bigwigs, do you know that Jeff Bezos became the world's richest man for, I don't know, a matter of hours last week?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's still pounding the top there, so he's probably going to end up as the world's richest man.
That is absolutely incredible to me.
Yeah, it's wild. I have to say, I agree.
Yeah. Your Viper Energy is up. Renter Center up 7.5%. Actually, I was a little bit nervous about that because when their earnings came out last week, after hours and into the pre-market, they were down like 10%. But they started climbing and climbing and climbing. Now, they're right at 1360, is right at a breakout point. 1364 is the actual number that I targeted. 1364 is a breakout point that if it can get past there, there's an opportunity for a massive short squeeze because there's a lot of short interest on this.
Oh, okay. Well, that should be fun. We'll talk about that on the next show. Yep.
All right. Well, I'll see you again next week.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.